Our first case of the day is State versus Devers. And Mr. Devers, you are on Zoom, is that correct?
Yes, sir, Your Honor.
Very good. Good morning to you. And Mr. Ralph, you are here in the courtroom.
Yes.
Good morning to you. Do either of you have questions before we begin?
No, Your Honor.
No, sir, Your Honor.
Very good. And Mr. Devers, you understand you have up to 10 minutes to argue. And if you want to reserve perhaps two of those 10 minutes for a rebuttal to what Mr. Ralph will have to say, you may do that.
Yes, sir, Your Honor.
Okay. Do you wish to do that?
Yes, sir, Your Honor.
Very good. So the bailiff will keep time. You will see, I believe, I hope you can see the clock, and you will have 8 minutes to argue, although sometimes you go over that. We might ask you questions and use up your rebuttal time, but we'll try to honor that if at all possible. Do you have any other questions before we begin?
No, sir, Your Honor.
Very good. Then you get to go first, Mr. Devers. You may proceed. Thank you.
All right. I would first like to acknowledge the court and thank you all for allowing me this time. This case is a case that is of deception. It is a case where the state prosecutor has proceeded to deceive the court by stating that the sole perpetrator of the court is guilty of this crime and that I aided and abetted him. This is the furthest thing from the truth. On September the 5th, Larry Goins' charges were dismissed. And being that they were dismissed, he alone, per the state's theory, was the sole perpetrator and the sole person to rob, shoot, and kill Sergeant Kyle LaFleur. By the state's theory, I waited down the street, and then he ran from the scene, and then exited the area in my vehicle. As I've said before, this is the furthest thing from the truth. We've argued in the post-conviction a legal innocence claim. We've also argued a prosecutorial misconduct claim. The prosecutorial misconduct claim was one that the state court failed to adjudicate properly because they knew that the state had told the jury lies and deceived the court. We have also argued the legal innocence claim because the state lacked legal basis like the crime of robbery. I am incapable of committing a crime of robbery being so many miles down the road. I am incapable of firing a firearm and shooting Sergeant Cal LaFleur at the scene when I was not there. So for the state to stand up to the jury and tell them that they can prove beyond a reasonable doubt that Larry Goins committed this crime and that I aided and abetted him is wrong. It's a miscarriage of justice. I am an innocent man convicted of a crime that I did not commit. The state also withheld evidence. The charges of Larry Goins, after being dismissed, the complete case file was sealed. So I was unable to obtain and acquire the dismissal document, which would have also proven my innocence to the jury. It would have also stopped the prosecutor from being able to say his name and use clothing and articles and evidence of that matter pertaining to him. If you remove Larry Goins from this trial, then what you have is Jason Devers standing alone to answer for a crime that the jury would have never convicted him for because it was impossible for him to commit miles down the road. We also argued that the claims that were made should have been construed under a remedial sense because I am not a student of the law. I'm a simple layman someone who does not know the law, and I completely submit to that fact that I am not a 7-year law student. I do not know what I'm doing here. I'm completely rambling on, but I mean, what else can you do when you're trying to fight for your life? Your freedom has been taken from you under a deceptive manner. What else can you do? I also made claims of ineffective assistance of counsel, claiming that the appellate counsel was ineffective for failing to raise on direct appeal ineffective assistance of trial counsel, for failing to acquire the dismissal document. Also raised an ineffective assistance of counsel claim on appellate counsel for failing to raise ineffective assistance of trial counsel for failing to object to the conduct of the prosecutor during trial when stating things of Larry Goings' guilt and inferring guilt upon me through Larry Goings. In the appeal to the Nebraska Supreme Court, we stated, the record plainly reflects that Deaver straightforwardly asserted that his appellate counsel was ineffective for failing to assert that his trial attorney was ineffective for failing to object and challenge Deaver's legal innocence in the district court. Since the criminal offense of felony murder and use of a deadly weapon to commit a felony was dismissed against the principal, Larry Goings, Deaver's co-defendant, then logic dictates that Deaver's cannot be found guilty of the same crime under an aiding and abetting theory. The Deaver's trial counsel should have objected to such conduct on the part of the prosecutor and made the jury abreast of the fact that the prosecutor dismissed the case against Larry Goings. Due to the facts that the prosecution deliberately deceived the jury in this case, I believe that it is a miscarriage of justice to continue to keep me incarcerated for this crime. A crime in which and I know that this court does not review the evidence, and I'm not trying to get you to review the evidence, but I'm trying to get you to see that the record is severely flawed in a way that it undermined and tarnishes the integrity of the judicial system.
Mr. Deavers, did Mr. Goings plead guilty to some crime?
No, sir. I have here, in which I showed some to the Supreme Court in my discovery motion, the articles. First degree murder charge has been dropped against one of two men charged in the death of Sergeant Kyle LaFleur. Charges dropped, sir, never to be picked back up. At the time of my trial, Larry Goings was sitting at home on his couch enjoying his liberty, while I rotted in jail for a crime that even the state, even the man standing there before you as a representative of the state, knew that it would be impossible for me to commit this crime. He'll try to say that I'm a second degree principal, but by Nebraska definition of second degree principal, I was supposed to be present on the scene. Now, I bring here before you today just the facts of the case, Your Honors. I tell you that I wasn't on the scene at the time of this crime. I came out of that club, warmed up my truck, and then I took off and got out of there, because I was on my way home. I don't even, this was my first time in 13 odd years even going to a nightclub. I just don't like them. It's not my cup of tea, but it was, 10 days before my birthday and one of my relatives' birthdays, and I chose to attend. But I can tell you, had I known that any of this was going to be, if I could have had a magic crystal ball to see all of this, I would have never went to that club. I normally stay at home with my kids and we play Fortnite and other video games on the PlayStation and Xbox. I'm a father of 10. This is not my, it's not what I do.
Very good, Mr. Deavers. I appreciate that. It looks like you've got about 2 minutes for rebuttal. Is that what you wish to reserve those 2 minutes?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Now, Mr. Ralph, you may approach. And you may proceed.
May it please the court. My name is Austin Ralph. I represent the state of Nebraska. Deaver's sole assigned error on appeal is that the district court erred in not liberally construing his claims in his post-conviction motion based on his pro se status. As set forth in my brief, that assigned error is without merit. And even if we look to beyond what he actually assigned to the claims he argued in his brief, those claims did not warrant an evidentiary hearing. Accordingly, this appeal is without merit, and we ask this court to affirm the judgment below. I'll start first with the assigned error. Like I said, it's just that the district court erred in not liberally construing his claims based on his pro se status. It relies on federal procedural rule to argue that point. As I said in my brief, that procedural rule is not binding on Nebraska courts. This court has repeatedly and often held that pro se litigants are held to the same standard as those represented by counsel. Accordingly, that assigned error is without merit.
The way I'm hearing Mr. Deaver's argument in part is that perhaps evidence of the dismissal with Goins was not made available to his team in a timely manner. What do you say about that?
First would be that's not assigned as error. Second would be the evidence, I guess, would have been known. He had the news articles. I guess he could have put on evidence. He could not have put on evidence because I think it was inadmissible. So I guess whether it was disclosed, it's just all irrelevant to me under the law. The charges, whether dismissed or not, against Mr. Goins have no effect on his charges as a second
degree principal. But Mr. Deaver's is arguing to the contrary, that if the jury had been informed that Mr. Goins had been dismissed, that would have cast doubt on his role, if any, in this episode.
Right, but I don't think that evidence is admissible under the law. I cited Lefebvre, I cited CJS as well. What happens in a separate case when you have two principals is immaterial, and so it wouldn't have been admissible.
So there are two principals for first degree murder, or are there two principals on aiding and abetting? So help
there,
take
well,
that out for us. Thanks.
Sure. You would have a first degree principal, Mr. Goins, the person allegedly who shot and robbed Mr. LaFleur. You'd have a second degree principal, Mr. Deaver's, who aided and abetted those crimes. Under our law, statutory 28206, everybody who aids, abets, procures, whatever, all are treated as principals. They're all the same. Looking at like CJS, for example, if principals in the first and second degrees are tried separately, the judgment against one has no bearing on the judgment against the other.
Does that mean that if Mr. Goins had actually been tried in this case and acquitted, it would have had no impact upon Mr. Deaver's case?
Yes. The U.S. Supreme Court has said that. A defendant, Standifer versus United States, 1980. A defendant accused of aiding and abetting in the commission of a federal offense may properly be convicted despite the prior acquittal of the alleged actual perpetrator of the offense.
Was Goins acquitted?
No. As far as I'm aware, based on the allegations here, the charges were just dismissed. They could be refiled. I don't know why or for what purpose. They're not proceeding.
Maybe I'm poorly informed. So was Mr. Deaver's convicted, charged with aiding and abetting? Or convicted
yes.
of aiding and abetting?
He was prosecuted as an aider and abetter, Goins being the first degree principal.
Even if the fact that Goins was not convicted doesn't preclude a conviction of Deaver's, isn't it another step to say that the evidence would be inadmissible? Why couldn't the jury still consider that as a fact?
Well, it is another step, but I guess two points.
You haven't cited authority to us that says this evidence is inadmissible, right? Your Lefebvre and CJS citations don't talk about evidence admissibility.
I don't believe those do. I think Standifer does in particular. And again, they're talking about the federal version of the statute there that we have, 28206, basically. But they say with the enactment of that section, All participants in conduct violating a federal criminal statute are principals. As such, they are punishable for their criminal conduct. The fate of other participants is irrelevant.
Have we said that exactly?
I don't know if this court has said that precisely, but I guess that's the authority I have, and it makes sense too. The other point I would offer to you would be sort of the counterexample of, let's say Goins was convicted. I don't think the state would be allowed to say, "Hey, Goins was convicted. Let's get that evidence in that proves his guilt as well." It's not relevant. And if it's not relevant, it's not admissible. That's, 401.
So is that the standard? Charges against Goins were dismissed? Everybody seems to agree that's the fact.
Well, I mean,
and that's not relevant. Is that the state's position?
Yes. That's the allegation. I don't have anything in the record, showing that, but in his post-conviction motion, it's alleged. I mean, you can Google and see that the charges apparently were dismissed. I don't know on what grounds or why. But our position is that that's irrelevant under the law.
The state's position that Goins was dismissed? Charges against Goins were dismissed?
There's nothing in the record showing that. That's the allegation.
And this was dismissed without an evidentiary hearing. So we're basically still
correct
on the allegations.
Correct. But like I said, it's our position based on the law, as I understand it, relevance, logic, all that. That's simply not relevant to proceeding against Mr. Devers. State still had the burden to prove beyond a reasonable doubt, and they did. Goins was the first degree principal, shot and killed the four, and Mr. Devers aided and abetted.
So would it be relevant for the jury to know in an aiding and abetting who else was a participant? State or even the defense put on evidence? Would they just say some other unnamed person was
certainly, yeah, the identity
and so forth? Or
the identity of the person wouldn't necessarily be material in terms of the aiding and abetting, or requisite, I should say, not necessarily material, but the fact that the crime occurred. You had to have had a crime for the person to aid and abet. That's the critical point. So the identity of the first degree principal would not have been.
So it's aiding and abetting the commission of a crime, not aiding and abetting another individual named or unnamed.
It's not. Yes. Yes.
In the motions, it does appear that there is an allegation of a layered post-conviction claim, isn't there?
Yes. Yes,
claim against direct appellate counsel that relates back to a claim against trial counsel.
Yes, like I said, as I read his motion and then his brief on appeal, the claim itself was appellate counsel was ineffective for not raising trial counsel's ineffectiveness for not producing evidence of the dismissal of Goins' charges. Then he also had a separate sort of prosecutorial misconduct claim, but
in the district court here. Threw one of the claims out, one of the arguments out, based upon it wasn't brought at its earliest opportunity.
Yes, as a procedural default, which would not be accurate considering it's a layered claim. But what I did in my brief is I just went straight to the merits of the claim, which is that the evidence of the charges being dismissed is irrelevant. And so whether the district court was right or not, the result was correct. And no evidentiary hearing was warranted in our
view. So when was the earliest that the absence of evidence, relevant or not, of Goins dismissal could have been brought by Mr. Devers?
I'm not sure.
When was the earliest?
Well, I mean, he brought a layered claim. This was the first opportunity to bring a layered claim. It's our position, however, that the evidence would have been inadmissible regardless because it's not relevant. And so that's why the evidentiary hearing is not warranted.
You were talking, were you not, about the prosecutorial misconduct?
I think in his brief and in his motion also had a separate claim. The other claim that I think he argued is prosecutorial misconduct for proceeding against Mr. Devers while, I guess, simultaneously, dismissing the charges against Goins. I think that would also be without merit. no evidence you're hearing warranted, further that it would be procedurally defaulted because he could have raised that on direct appeal.
Is any state law anywhere, or it's federal law, but it's gone the other way on this kind of issue?
Not that I'm aware of. I didn't look beyond Lafave, CJS, and U.S. Supreme Court. Unless this court has further questions, we'd ask that you affirm.
Very good. Thank you very much. Mr. Devers, you have 2 minutes of rebuttal time to argue if you care to take it.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Your Honor. All right. So I would first say that for the state to claim irrelevance, it was surely relevant to run Larry Goins' name all through my trial. As I stated before, you remove Larry Goins' name, then we are not sitting here right now. Secondly, in State versus Kidd, the Nebraska Supreme Court has ruled that in State versus Kidd, aiding and abetting is not a crime by itself. It's not a separate crime. It is a way to hold one liable for an underlying offense. What underlying offense could I have committed alone? Larry Goins needed to be convicted of felony murder in order for me to be convicted of aiding and abetting. Otherwise, what did I aid and abet? What crime did I commit? My actions alone would not have caused Sergeant Kyle LaFleur's death. So therefore, we have Larry Goins' charges being dismissed and Jason Devers standing up alone to answer for a crime, alone, a crime that he could not have committed alone. So then we have, I'm convicted as an aider and abetter, but here it is, who did I aid and abet? And even in the jury instructions, it says at the end, and in fact, the other person committed the crime. We have to go off facts here. Justices of the Supreme Court, we have to go off facts. These are not facts. These are speculation at best. Speculation that I committed a crime that I didn't commit. We are the heartland. We have to show the rest of the United States that we will stand against injustices. Because what proceeds from the heart is what defiles a man.
Thank you very much, Mr. Devers. We appreciate your participating by Zoom this morning. And that concludes arguments then on State versus Devers. The court will go on to the next day, and you both are excused, or to the next case, and you both are excused. And the next case is State versus Fernandez.